You're listening to Kira's Pink Sparkle Podcast with Kira Lawrence, challenging perceptions of learning disability. The views you're about to hear are the personal views of Kira Lawrence and her guests, and not the organisations she is associated with.
Welcome to this next episode of Kira's Pink Sparkle Podcast. And I'm delighted to be joined by Sean Wallace, aka the Dark Destroyer from ITV quiz show The Chase. So welcome to my podcast, Sean.
Hello, Kira. It's a pleasure and honour for me to be here on the Pink Podcast. I've been really looking forward to it, actually, because we've been talking for a long, long time for me coming on, and here I am. So I'm really pleased to be here.
And thank you. It really means a lot.
Yeah, and it means a lot for me to be interviewed by you as well. So the feeling's mutual.
Amazing. So, I've done my intro. My first question is, please, can you tell me all about your book?
Yes. So I wrote a book called Chasing the Dream, which I published in the autumn of 2019. And the reason why I decided to write it, Kara, is because, you know, when people see you in the public eye, they think you're born rich, they think you're born clever, and they think you're born famous. And for me, that could be further from the truth. You know, I've had a backstory of heartache, disappointment and struggle. And I think it's important for me to share my story with the public, for them to realise that if you do have setbacks in life, it doesn't mean to say that your life's over or that your future's behind you. And it's an inspirational tale. And I think it, I hope it inspires people who read it.
Amazing. So where can people go and buy it?
You can still get it on Amazon. You can also go to my publisher, who's called Panthorpe and Milner. So, those are the two outlets you can actually get it. I'd like it if you could actually go by my publisher, because if you want a signed copy, then we'll make sure that's arranged. But Amazon or Panthorpe and Milner are my publishers.
Fantastic. So please, people, go out and buy this amazing book. Right.
Oh, cheers, Cara. Thank you so much.
Just to say it's Kira. It's pronounced Kira, but
Kira, sorry.
No, don't worry.
Kira, I've got it now. Sorry. Oh, that's shocking.
It's Irish. Everybody gets it wrong. I get even called Claire sometimes.
All right, then. Okay. Kira. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, no worries. So my next question for you is, please, could you tell me a little bit about your legal career?
Well, this year I'll be celebrating 40 years as a practicing barrister. I've been a practicing criminal barrister for the last 40 years. I got called to the bar in 1984. I've always wanted to be a lawyer, Kira, ever since I was 11 years old. So I'm just basically living a lifelong dream. Of a young kid who had dreams and ambitions of wanting to practice at the bar. I was inspired by, you're far too young to know such programs as Ron Poller, the Bailey, Crown Court, which was a really good program in the 1970s. And I was really inspired by people using their skills to try and help the disadvantaged people within society. And I wanted to be like that. So it was a struggle. And I talk about my struggles of trying to qualify initially in my autobiography, and hopefully that will inspire people that if you do have setbacks like I've had, that it shouldn't deter you from not only qualifying as a lawyer, doctor, or whatever you want to be in life.
That's really amazing. Well, I'm looking forward to reading it when I get my copy. So
let me know what you think about it.
I will, I promise.
Okay.
Brilliant. So what is your work like being a barrister? What's your job like?
Well, as I say, it's not easy being a criminal practitioner, you know, especially when you first start out. You know, you've got to actually learn your trade in terms of the art of speaking. The type of cases you get are relatively minor cases in order for you to actually build up your experience. But over the last 40 years, I've done a whole range of criminal trials. I may get involved in serious types of trials, for example, murder and serious types of offences, firearms offences and so on and so forth. So I practised all over the country, mainly in the Old Bailey, which is a central criminal court, and up and down, notably in centres as Birmingham, Bristol in particular, and Manchester. So, I've had a wide but worthwhile career so far as I'm concerned.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Great. So my next question is a little bit related to what I do in my career.
Okay.
So if somebody with a disability or learning disability like me wanted to study law and the criminal justice system, what reasonable adjustments do you think could be made to support them to achieve that career if they wanted to?
A great there's been a tremendous paradigm shift in relation to the bar being more diverse, being more inclusive, and the mere fact a person does have disabilities, be it physical or mental, doesn't preclude them from actually developing a career at the bar. And as I say, the bar is more alive, and most professions are now more alive and more sensitive to the fact that there are greater opportunities to give assistance to people with disabilities, or be it physical or mental, as long as they've got the competent skills in order to do so in terms of the profession. So it is being widely recognised, and as I say, a lot is being done behind the scenes to ensure that if you do have any disadvantage or disabilities, that does not preclude you from developing a career in law. Which is a really, really good thing. A dear friend of mine, who's a criminal practitioner called Mark Robinson, he suffers from dyspraxia, and that hasn't precluded him from developing a thriving criminal practice. And as I say, he champions the fact that it's important that people who do have those disabilities are given the requisite support in order to help them develop their career. And he's at a top chambers called Garden Court Chambers, and he's thriving and surviving.
That's amazing to hear, and that now it's being looked at, and now, changes are being made to help people get
Absolutely.
into that. So that's
Absolutely.
amazing. So thank you for sharing that with me, because obviously, a lot of work that I do with people with learning disabilities is helping them to achieve work, to helping them to
Good.
achieve lives,
Yeah.
and it's something that I'm very passionate about. So I'm really pleased changes being made so that people can enter that career field. That's great.
And it's important that people like myself should use their platform in an altruistic way to try and encourage and nurture that fact. Because just because you do have learning difficulties, it doesn't mean to say that you are not so clever, that you're not bright. People have dyslexia. We're told back in the past that you were stupid because you can't read, and nothing could be further from the truth. My dear colleague, Anne Hegarty, suffers from
Yes.
autism, and she, as I say, is a beacon to people who suffer from that particular disability. And it just goes to show that that should not preclude you from having a thriving and successful career in television. And she should be applauded in relation to the work she does in terms of highlighting autism and the fact that it does not preclude you from having a worthwhile and fruitful career.
I was going to ask you about Anne, so you beat me to it. I was going to ask a question about her.
Okay.
So, yeah, I can scrap that off my list now.
Please just got that now, Kira. Thank you. See, I've got
Okay.
your name right now, Kira. Thank you.
Okay. So, my next question is slightly back to legal. How, in your personal view, do you think that the criminal justice system and courts could be made more accessible so that if people with a disability or learning disability needed to go through that process so they can have the right support?
That's self-evident, especially in relation to witnesses, in terms of giving them the right support in order for them to actually give their evidence in the way which is helpful to the court. So the courts are really helping witnesses in particular. Also, court users. It's also important that court users, because justice must not only be done, it must be seen to be done. It's an open system whereby anybody irrespective of your background, irrespective of any physical or mental difficulties you may have, should have access to see law in action. So a lot has been done in terms of making courts more user-friendly
Right.
for everybody within society. As I say, sadly, the pace isn't as quick as we want to because obviously there
Yeah.
are sort of financial constraints in terms of the economic situation which we find ourselves in.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean to say that advocates like myself and other people who are passionate in relation to making sure that the law is user-friendly for everybody within society, and we'll continue to beat the drum to ensure that that is the case.
Fantastic, thank you. In your personal view, do you think there is enough awareness training given to people who work in the criminal justice system so that they understand disability?
It's getting better. As I say, nowadays, some workshops are developing that situation whereby we need to make sure that, as I've already made the point, that access to justice should be given to everybody. So nowadays, courts, judges, lawyers, and everybody surrounded with the process of the administration of justice in England are ensuring that everybody's needs are catered to. We shouldn't be simply paying lip service, simply saying it should be done. There is an active process in relation to making sure it's done. The pace is not as quick as we would like, as I say there, because there are financial constraints. That should never, ever be an excuse. And as I say, it's important for people like myself, and it's important that podcasts like yourselves make sure that the message is hammered home. To ensure that we keep a vigilant eye to make sure that that is the case.
Definitely. Because actually, a few years ago, as part of my campaigning work, I actually went and met with some police services across the UK. And I went and spent some time with, I think, three or four different police services. And basically, we trained them up about learning disability so that they were really, really aware and they knew what changes to make, what support to give. And actually, you could really see them changing their attitude once they met people like me. But what really hit me is when I was visiting one of the police stations, they said, "Would you like to go down to the cells to really experience what it might like to be arrested and put in the cell?" So I was like, "Yeah, great," because I've never been there. I've never had that experience, and hopefully I never will, touch wood.
Yes, so.
So we did it through the whole process from when someone comes in to being questioned, going down to the cell, and it literally put the wind up me. And I was like, I don't understand how people get to that point and what they do it for. And so, I praise police. I think they do an amazing job.
Yeah, they did it. They do a good job in difficult circumstances. Obviously, as I say, it's not fair to say, it's not fair, right to say that the police are perfect in everything they do, especially in relation to the way in relation to the way in which they relate sometimes to certain sections within the society, people with disabilities. Sometimes they don't have the awareness, black people in particular, in relation to the way in which they're arrested. So I think it's important that the police, and I think a campaigning effort always should be made to ensure that the police, in terms of the way in which they deal with people who suffer with disabilities, do so in a proportionate, but more importantly, sensitive way, in addition to carrying out their duties in a professional manner.
Yep, exactly. I totally agree with you. Brilliant. Thank you. Okay, so now I'm just going to ask some more kind of general questions, Graham.
Okay.
So, number one, if you could go back in time and give advice to your younger self, what would you say?
I, as a young kid, I'd love you to, I wish I could show you the whole of my house,
Okay.
Kira, but, I've got on my wall, a mural called My Inspiration. And that's some of my black heroes and heroines who have inspired me as a young black boy growing up. And when I was a young black boy, I used to say that if I could achieve half of what these people are doing on the world stage, who had the same color skin as me, then my life is going to have some sort of meaning. So what I would say to my younger self going back is, and I always say this to young people as well, the future belongs to us. Nobody, tomorrow's never promised to anybody, but you should always believe that you can achieve anything you like in life. Everybody needs a support and guidance in order to actually attain their goals and ambitions. But I would say to my younger self, never stop believing in the dreams that you have. Although you do need a lot of bit, you do need 1% talent and 99% luck, but you can make that 1% talent go a long, long way if you've given the opportunity.
That's amazing. That's exactly what I would say. I would probably say that to my younger self as well. So that's great. Amazing. Great answer. Thank you. Okay. The next one is, do you have a bucket list? If yes, what are your top three things you would still like to achieve?
Well, as if you read my book, Chasing the Dream, that's why it's called that particular title, Kira, because one thing I always say to people is this. When I qualified as a barrister, I was so pleased. My mum and dad were pleased because I didn't turn out to be what my teacher thought was going to be a waste of time in terms of my life. But even amidst that celebration, the one thing what struck home to me was this, Kira, was that all the success, all the tears, all the frustration, and the ultimate triumph, all it did was bring me to the start line of a different challenge. So you should never, ever rest on your laurels. Okay? Always be striving to set up goals and targets, not only for yourself, but for others to look up to you and basically say, I want to be like that particular role model because he or she is so inspiring. So for me, it's all about setting goals for myself, setting challenges. And although I'm always forward thinking in terms of my own life, I always look back to try and help others climb up that ladder of opportunity, the same ladder people helped me to climb up. But I don't want them to climb up to the same level as me, Kira. I want them to go beyond me. I want them to go
Exactly, I
beyond me.
agree. I
Yeah.
agree with that.
Because the one thing I'm conscious about this, Kira, is this. I'm today's news, I'm tomorrow's chip wrapper, as we say. So I'm not going to live forever, right? So I need to pass the torch of responsibility onto the next generation.
That's so great. Like what you just said is so right. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do in my work career now, because the younger generation of young people with learning disabilities are now starting to come through. And I'm starting to mentor some of them to kind of get ready for things that they want to do. And it's wonderful. I take them out to present with me at conferences. I get to go and, do media interviews with them. And they've really started to have a confidence boost. And
Good. And it's good.
it's
Yeah. And one day, Kira, I hope to you to invite me to one of your conferences where there are a lot of people with those learning disabilities, physical and whatever, so I can speak to them and hopefully inspire them and realize that, I'm no different to you in terms of the struggles I've had. I had learning difficulties in terms of trying to understand education. So I overcame that through hard work, determination, and the support of people. And what you're doing is a fantastic job because you are, as I say, a role model or a goal model which people look up to, and you're using your abilities to try and help others. And hats off to you, Kira. Hats off to you, my dear.
Thank you very much. That really means a lot. And I watch you on the chase, and you're so confident, and you come across as confident. And I'm like, well, if he can do it, I can do it. If
Yeah.
Anne can do it, I can do it. And
Absolutely, 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 and that's how it should be.
Brilliant. Thank you. So you slightly answered that one, so I won't ask that again. Okay. So, I'm now going to ask you some questions about the chase.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So, if you could get to ask any question on the show, what would you ask?
I don't know. I suppose. No information is useless information, and any good question on a quiz show is a good question. But questions are only easy if you know the answer. So it's very difficult for me to say what question would I like to ask, because that's Bradley's role. I'm there to answer questions because I'm a sort of professional chaser. And the one thing I'm proud about the show, two things I'm proud about the show, I was the world's first chaser. So
Yes, you are.
I was the first person appointed to the role in 2008. And when Mark was also appointed the following year, we both did the pilot together. And 15 years later, here we are. And,
Wow.
never in my wildest dreams did I think a quiz show would be so popular. We thought hopefully we'd get one or two series, and the ITV commissions would probably say that they've had enough. But it's a testament not only to the show itself, it's a testament to the host Bradley, it's a testament to my fellow chasers, but more importantly, the people who work behind the scenes who you don't see. From the floor manager Greg to the cameraman, the various cameramen ranging from Beachy to sort of Phil, ranging from my production manager Caroline Sell to my three bosses, Michael Kelpie, Martin Scott, and Helen Tunbridge, to the people who get me the coffee. We all work together as a team. Nobody thinks they're better than anybody. The wardrobe department, Sheena, Babette, Leslie, we all respect and love each other. And I suppose that is translated off screen onto the screen. We have a great time. It's not a chore. I feel like, how can I put this? I feel like a member of the Beatles. Everybody wanted to be in the Beatles, but I am. And I'm the sort of quizzing equivalent of probably one of the best quiz combos in the country. The team of Eggers may sort of disagree with that, but that's another right there. That's another argument. But the six of us feel so privileged to be using our what we love doing best, answering questions, a hobby which grew into a profession. So I'm fortunate. I'm very grateful. The one thing I don't take for granted, Kira, is this: my position on the show. I never ever take that for granted. Because I'm only as good as the last question I answered correctly. So I don't
That's
take anything for granted. I don't take the show for
amazing.
granted.
That's
And none
really
of us do.
amazing. Yeah. And I think that's what I try and do now. Now that I've got my podcast up and running, I use that platform to raise awareness for good. So
Sure.
I interview lots of different people every month. I get people from charity workers to celebrities to journalists to PR people. And I really help to raise awareness. And it's really lovely. Last month, I interviewed Nikki Campbell, who is the broadcaster.
I know
And
Nikki, you keep me on the chase. I know Nikki very well.
he was lovely. But obviously, he was diagnosed with a condition, and he'd only just started talking about it really publicly just after we started filming. And so, I was like, that's amazing that he felt so open to talk about his diagnosis. And that was amazing. And I really wish more people would come out and use their platform for good. And I think we've started seeing a change, and people are starting to do that.
Well, sometimes it takes courage to actually, reveal something like that because people feel vulnerable. People think that they're going to be looked in a different way. But I think if you've got the confidence within yourself, and if you do have the platform whereby speaking out can be a force of change for good, like Nicky has done, then all power to his elbow because he's got the platform. He's a very well-known man. He's a brilliant broadcaster, and the mere fact that he can come out and talk about his own disabilities, and it's not affected his career in any way, shape, or form. So that then should inspire other people to basically say, well, that's such a courageous thing to do. I want to have the same courage to actually, now spread my wings, to actually be confident in myself and not let any disability I have become an anchor of my sort of development.
Definitely. And I think that's really important. Okay, fab. So my next question is about the chase. Do you think there could be more people on the show in the future, like the chase, like contestants or chasers who have a disability so they can be even more inclusive? So do you think there should be more chasers on the
Yeah,
show?
they can be. I mean, that's a matter for the producers, actually, as to the type of people who will become chasers. But Anne is the illustrative example. Anne was an original chaser. She's had autism. She's never hidden that fact. And that's not stopped her from having a sort of burgeoning and fantastic career. In terms of contestants, we are inclusive. We've had people who have had disabilities. We've had people who have had sight disabilities, physical disabilities, and it's all about them getting off the sofa and being confident enough to say, "I want to go on a show." So that's the only way. That's the only way we can do that. I used to be like that, and the one thing I always say is this: procrastination is the thief of time. If you sit on your sofa and don't do it, it'll never get done. So don't let disabilities be preclude you from doing anything you like, from being on the chase, being on any quiz show, or doing anything.
I was recently on Newsnight on the BBC. I was on it with Victoria Derbyshire recently. So that was amazing.
Yes.
Fantastic. Okay, so my last question about the chase is, if you could make and commission your own quiz show, what would you like to call it?
Oh, that's difficult. I've spent many a night trying to actually develop a quiz show. Sometimes I'm thinking too hard. One day I will. I don't know. It would be difficult for me to actually say what type of quiz. I'd like it to be a quiz show. I couldn't give you an answer to that, Kira, because A, I don't know the format, and once I knew the format, which would be acceptable, and a good watch on TV, then I'd probably have the idea. So until I come up with that idea, that's something I couldn't answer.
Okay, no, that's fine. No, thank you. Okay, so now on to the fun quiz questions. We're
Okay.
going to do a little bit of a quiz, so I hope you're
All right.
ready.
Okay. I'll try my
Okay.
best.
So my podcast is called Kira's Pink Sparkle Podcast. So of course, I'm going to ask you some fun pink themed questions.
Okay, go on.
Can you name all of the pink ladies in the musical film Grease?
I know that. Oh God, what was her name? That lady Channing played her. Channing, what's her name? She played the lead
Yeah,
one.
you're near it, yeah.
You've got the one who sang that song. What was that song they called again? She Wanted to Leave School. Oh, what was her name? Then there was one, the high beauty school dropout. Oh God, what was her
Yeah,
name?
you're near it, you're near.
What was her name? Because one of them, not Sandra D. Is it Sandra D? The Sandra D one?
Sandy,
The
yeah, she becomes a pink, she
one. Yeah,
becomes a pink lady,
she
yeah.
started with the lady at the end. But there was one who basically wanted to leave to become a hairdresser. And there was a song in the Grease. Oh, I can't remember her name. I can't remember.
Okay, so I will read them out.
Go on.
They were Rizzo,
Rizzo! That played well.
Marti,
Yeah.
Frenchie,
Frenchie, that's the
and
one.
Jan.
Okay, yeah, the pink ladies. Okay,
Great.
well, I was close. I was
I was
close.
close. You were very close. Yes, you were. You were very close. So one point to you.
Okay, well, I'll say a quarter of a point. Okay.
So question two. In a packet of Mr. Kipling's French fancies, what colour are the three fancies? And one is obvious.
Pink is one. Okay, pink, orange,
Near, very near.
brownish, orangey
Yeah,
brown,
chocolate brown, yeah.
and what other color would be acceptable? Light blue,
The other one is yellow.
yellow. Yellow.
They're pink, yellow, and chocolate brown.
I love Mr. Kipling. I do know, as I say, they make exceedingly good cakes.
Exactly. So hopefully we might get some after this.
Okay.
Brilliant. So my next question is, what is the real life name of the singer Pink?
Alicia Moore.
Correct. Yay, we're rolling. Okay. Question four. Who designed the pink dress worn by Marilyn Monroe while she sings Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes? Who
Oh
made
dear.
it?
Okay. Who would have been a famous designer around that time? You'd have had Chanel, you'd have had Dior, you'd have had Givenchy. I'm gonna say, because she used to wear Coco Chanel, the Chanel number 5, and she said that's the only thing she wore to bed. I'm gonna say Coco Chanel.
The answer is actually William Travilla.
Okay, never heard of him. Okay.
And the final one you'll be glad to know
No.
is, in which South American country is the presidential
Palace.
palace known as the
Coca
Pink House?
Rosa. That is in Argentina.
Yeah!
It's called Coca Rosa. Yeah, I knew he was going to ask that question. Casa Rosa.
Amazing. Brilliant. Well, thank you so
Cool.
much.
Cool. That's not too bad. I've got
Yes.
50% right questions. That's not too bad.
Well done. Well done. Good game. Good game. Brilliant. Well, that just leaves me to say thank you so
You too.
much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Kira's Pink Sparkle Podcast. Join the conversation. Follow us on X at Kira's Pink Pod.